Welcome to episode 282 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat brand values and making a stand with Dwayne Henkins from the Portland Trailblazers.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who is journaling every morning, or most mornings, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and yes, mostly, but most mornings, I am journaling. It has been something that I've said previously in the podcast. It's been really effective during lockdown. I think I did 100 days in a row in the early lockdown days, but missing a day every now and again, but I don't beat myself up about it. But it's good to get those thoughts out of your head sometimes. Thanks very much for listening. You can find me, contact me via email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com or via Twitter at Sean Callanan or at Sports Geek. Or you can reach out to me on multiple platforms, including LinkedIn. Send me a message. Or perhaps you have been joining me on the Sports Biz Zoom calls. If you're just tuning in, if you haven't tuned into the podcast for a while and you picked this one up because Dwayne is my guest today from the Portland Trailblazers, you've missed a lot on the Sports Biz Zoom front. We discussed membership ticketing, esports gaming, broadcast, sponsorship, grassroots sports, digital. And in the last couple of weeks, we have now moved the ability to watch a replay for Sports Geek patron subscribers. So it's great. So the last three episodes, calls, not really episodes, because it's really six. So there's the call on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. and the call on Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Now, that's in my time zone, Australian Eastern Standard Time, but it does work quite well to midday in Europe and South Africa or in the early evening on the Tuesday for my U.S. friends and North American friends, I should say. So the last three episodes are available on replays. If you want to catch up, learn about stadiums and venues, dive into our discussion about redesigning sport in a post-COVID world, or the discussion we had last week, or this week actually, which was, as I'm recording it, ticketing in 2021. How many cheeks in the seats? How do we get people back in the stands? So please either check out those replays or check out some of the topics we've got coming up. This week's will be millennials and sports. If you're listening to this very quickly, you'll be able to get into tomorrow's call. Developing new fan bases, whether they be geography based, gender based, socioeconomic based. How do sports go about developing new fan bases? And then in September 8-9, we're going to look at sports in the future. Sports in 2030. What's sports going to look like in 10 years' time? It's been great to have different people join the call. We've had people from Toronto Blue Jays, New York Giants, Cricket Australia, South African Rugby, South East Melbourne Phoenix, Basketball Australia, Sydney Kings, Melbourne United, Collingwood FC, St Kilda FC, the SCG, the Boston Red Sox, Brisbane Lions. It really has been terrific to get so much support from a bunch of different people. And a lot, I'm assuming a lot of you also listen to the podcast. So thank you very much. And also thank you very much to the Patreons that have come on board. Had a lot come on board, especially since we've started the Sports Biz Zoom replays. A quick shout out, Darren Anderson, thank you for signing up. Colin Kelly, former podcast guest, great to have you on board and appreciate you signing up. Akhil Bhaskar, thank you very much for signing up as a patron. Hugo from FlyFan have signed up as a startup supporter. So Hugo, thank you very much. You can see FlyFan's logo in these show notes and in all show notes. And also Sarah Stocks from Team Mo. Go and check out Team Mo. Team Mo is also a startup supporter. So check out Team Mo in the show notes. Why might you do it? It helps pay for the costs of producing the podcast, running the Zoom calls, and just supports all the work that we're doing in supporting the sports business world. You can do it personally as a personal supporter, a Zoom supporter, a startup supporter like Hugo and Sarah, or a silver or gold supporter. So please check it out, sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. But let's get into my chat with Dwayne Henkins from the Portland Trailblazers. We explained that this episode was meant to happen a little bit earlier, but it got delayed. but we got back on track. Here's my chat with Dwayne. Very happy to welcome a good mate of mine, all the way from Portland, Oregon, the Portland Trailblazers. He is the Chief Marketing and Innovation Officer for the Portland Trailblazers, Dwayne Hankins. Welcome back to the podcast.
It's great to be back and great to see you, man. It's been a while. How's everything going?
It's going well. It's going well, and it has been a while. I think we actually had this podcast scheduled like way back in the olden days. When COVID hit and the NBA shut down, so we will get into that. So thank you very much for rescheduling. We will get to that because we can't have a conversation without talking about some of those big issues. But you were one of my first guests way back when the podcast was clipping different radio interviews, and we had a short chat there about your time when I was on ABC Grandstand. But so I want to go back. How did you get your break into sports?
Wow. I went to school for computer engineering at Ames and Iowa State University, and I lasted about a semester, maybe a little longer, before I changed to journalism. And for 3 years at college after that, I had no idea what I wanted to do. But then I started looking up the opportunity to work in sports, and it was really interesting. I was never good enough at any sport at all to perform in them in any way. But I loved sports, and I grew up with the Michael Jordan Bulls, and watching The Last Dance this summer was exactly sort of my era.
Yep.
And that's how I fell in love with sports. And the idea that you could work in sports, again, didn't strike me until I was ready to graduate from college. So it was kind of just in the nick of time. And, I got an internship with a minor league baseball team in the Chicago suburbs, King County Cougars, which led to another internship, this time with the Marlins. And then, I eventually hitched my wagon in Minnesota with the Wild. And that's really where I had my first opportunity to do things. And I kind of saw at the time with the Wild, this opportunity that was really growing to do more in the digital landscape. This will show my age, but, that was when MySpace and Facebook and Twitter and those things started really taking off. And what was interesting about that time was that you really were able to just all of a sudden, subscribe or follow or like all these different either teams or personalities. I remember at that time, even like following your account and being like, oh, this guy knows what's going on, or like Shane Harmon or other folks. And that's how we met, and that's how you met other people and you learned about the business. And I think in following all the teams at the time, it was pretty clear to me that they were giving the keys to their PR departments and saying, here, you guys run with this. Like, this seems like a really good place to blast our press releases. And every team was doing that. And then that opportunity with the Wild led to working with the Kings. And at the Kings, my mentor and my still boss and at the Blazers now, Chris McGowan, I had these ideas and we had these ideas about doing things differently. And, one thing led to another. And that's how we ended up on your first episode of the podcast. And it's changed a lot in the 7 years since then. So in the 7 years since then, I'm now with the Blazers overseeing the marketing innovation for the team, still working for Chris McGowan, who I really appreciate as a mentor and as a leader and as someone who understands this space, because I still think a lot of teams deal with a lot of challenges in that area that I'm lucky and fortunate to not have to deal with. So in my current role, I manage, again, all the fan facing elements of our outfit.
So I'm going to stop you there, because you're going, this is my episode. You're going quickly. There's so much more I want to mine there. But that is fine. Didn't mean to cut you, because I just like even just the titles that you did hold, at Minnesota Wild of Web and Creative Services. It didn't even have digital in the name. It's right up there with Jeremy McPeak's title that he had. Webmaster was one of my favorites, because you were in that space where you were like updating MySpace, but just being, oh, can you be the guys that update the website? And then digital started to become more in play. Digital strategy started becoming a thing. And then, as you're now at Portland, marketing and digital were mashed together both in your role as VP of marketing and digital. Like that transition from the digital guys are updating the website and social, and that's what they're doing, and melding that the marketing efforts and digital. Like, how important was that, you know, in your role in Portland to have those two together and having working those hand in hand? Because early on, like, digital, there was friction between digital and different departments because everyone was still trying to control different pieces. How important and how much easier it is to sort of bring those two together?
Yeah, that's a really good question, John. I mean, for me, I think, again, I give a lot of credit to Chris here, but he saw digital as the future of marketing. And so in his mind, if you knew digital, then you could do and you could learn the marketing piece. And when I got to Portland, you know, we were still doing a lot of traditional marketing, billboards and print ads and things like that. So the opportunity was there, you know, at that time to use digital, especially, you know, search engine marketing and other areas to sell individual tickets and really build our leads that way. So, you know, we never really saw a difference between those two things. And I had a great partner in Vince Arcandia who runs Stellar Algo. And he was with the Blazers, and he and I would constantly debate and challenge each other and get to a really good solution for what our technology stack looked like or how we were doing things. And, you know, him as the head of analytics and me on the head of marketing and digital side, it just was a really great partnership. And it allowed us to do some things and explore some things with the president who was willing to spend and invest in those areas.
Yep. And then, so then the other part, which is another sort of traditional area, was broadcast, which also came into your remit, which again is not standard, because normally the broadcast guys are over there, they're doing their thing, and they're like, here you go, digital guys, you can have this stuff and clip it up and send it wherever you want. Again, how did that change, I guess, how the broadcast was and then where the broadcast went, and I guess the product of the broadcast, how did that transform with it being under, I guess, your remit and, you know, your team's remit?
Yeah, another great question. So in the American sports, a lot of the time the broadcast lead at a team doesn't necessarily do much besides interface with the RSN and have that relationship. We're one of the few teams that does our own production and our own broadcast internally. And so while we are we're distributed by NBC Sports Northwest, our broadcast is internal. So our graphics, our production, everything is done, looks like our own home show. We sell the advertising for the TV spots and all of that. And so what that really allowed is the ability to do just a lot of different things. You know, whether it was changing or updating graphics, being really intentional about the things we're promoting on our broadcast, bringing in digital where and when we thought we could. And again, Chris just saw that there was this opportunity and ability to do that. And so we've really tried to create a very digital friendly broadcast in the way that we can. Now, I mean, a lot of the stuff is still challenging based on how distribution agreements are written up and RSN agreements are done. You know, we're still very linear in our approach. We do have Blazers Pass, which is a 15 game over the top package, which I think is pretty unique to teams. And that was really designed to allow fans without a cable package to get, you know, usually the 15 best games of the regular season. So.
Yep. And was there coming from a digital team where, you know, you're looking to be on the trend and be on top of the topics, which we're known for in Twitter, right? Which is, you know, if we go back to episode 6, we spoke about that. How do you take control of a trend and be part of the banter? That agile nature of your digital team and training a digital team to be able to respond to those things, were you able to take some of that to broadcast? Like, to be able to adapt and tap into what people are talking to, which is, again, if I'm putting broadcast traditional hat on, it's they've been really slow to move to that space. Like, they were slow to move to being part of conversations on Twitter and integrating in social. But because you've had your digital team's mindset of being agile and being able to adapt, has that been able to flow into your broadcast?
Yes, for sure. And I have to give, you know, there's so much credit to be given to who allows that to happen. And it starts with Jeff Curtin, who runs our broadcast team and understood very early on that stuff was going to be important and didn't create a wall for us to have to climb over to get that done. It includes Brooke Olsendam, our courtside reporter, who, you know, she definitely has a lot of the traditional duties of a courtside reporter, but she's also very in tune with the players on the social media side. We often promote or highlight things that they're posting on their own social media feeds. We really try to incorporate the player's personality into the broadcast because we feel like that's the one place, you know, aside from our digital content, that we can really let the player's personalities shine. So
one of the things you hear a lot at conferences, I don't know if you remember conferences, they were things where we'd all get together and talk about stuff like they used to happen in the olden days. But one of the things you hear at conferences a lot is, you know, you're putting the fans at the center of your strategy. Like it's a common phrase that you'll hear on a panel at different conferences. Talk about the Blazers fans and how you shape what you do around what they are specifically.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I got this job in April of 2013, I had never worked in the NBA and had never been to Portland. And so immediately needed to up my NBA knowledge and knowledge of Portland fans. And so we did a couple of pretty extensive brand audits to understand our voice. I think the LA Kings voice was very much if me and Pat were having a sarcastic conversation with our friends, and it sort of worked for LA, but we knew that it wasn't going to work in Portland and it was going to be important to find that voice. And so with all that research and all the work that we did, we really landed on, you know, four or five keywords, and those keywords were authentic, approachable, unique, energetic, and inclusive. And that's our brand in sort of five words. And, you know, I think a lot of teams may be able to relate to some of those terms. But for us, those things were really important. And anytime, even to this day, if we can check three or four of those boxes, it's usually going to be something that's going to be a hit. I mean, Portland is weird. It's just one of those things. Yep. So we embrace that. It's authentic. Like our fans, we have some superstars on our team for sure. But Portland fans are all about the team. And so how do we reflect the team? And so it was really just a lot of work to get to understand our fan base and really sit down and really understand what our pain points were, what our opportunities were, what our challenges were, and try to reflect those across the brand. And that's, you know, that Portland voice is really, it's Amara Baptist, of course, who runs it, but it's also just very much, it's intentional about what type of fan and what type of voice we're trying to have.
And so that is a really good point, because you're someone that back in the early days, you were on the tools and you were, you know, you would have been opening the Twitter account, or you would have been firing a tweet every now and again or tweaking some copy on an Instagram post. As you've moved up and handed those tools back, how have you fostered and encouraged and emboldened your staff to be able to do the same things you do and still being hitting those marks of, you know, some of those key points of the brand?
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, you have to have a pretty good understanding of where the line is. And I think we're definitely less we're not really as controversial as we were with the
but
Kings.
It's not about controversial. It's about, yeah. Hey, here's our, like, because there's a big, like, again, in the early days, it was like, hey, tech guys or hey, comms guys, can you just post stuff? And now you're, which is, you know, and now you're saying, here is our voice. You are the voice of the Blazers, like every, you know, and we wanted to have all of these things that what our brand is. Like, that's a bit, you know, it can be seen as a big responsibility. And how do you help shape that so the person that is doing it does hit those marks? And, you know, because sometimes you can see, especially, you know, you get someone talented like Amara doing it, but then if she's not there and someone else does it, how do you keep it smooth and consistent and have that same feel across, you know, across different platforms? That's probably more where my question was coming from.
Got it. Yeah. And I think, I mean, all of our employees, especially on the marketing side, they go through the brand audit and the brand work that we've done at when they start the job. Because in Amara's role, yeah, of course, she's key. She has the keyboard and she's sending the stuff. But there's an entire team sometimes that creates the content, whether it's Koji Matsumoto, whether it's Billy Olson. I mean, there's a group of people that are involved in creating it. And so everyone has an understanding of what the voice is. And then they work together to output the content that's going to match that. And so really, it's sort of you get indoctrinated into Rip City when you come here, and then everything that's, you know, that is part of that is you just kind of know what that brand looks like and what that personality looks like, and you're able to achieve it.
So it just becomes that sort of groupthink when you're working on different campaigns or workshopping different things or bouncing back ideas backwards and forwards on what this content's going to look like or how you're going to do this billboard or what this TVC is. That's the way to sort of get that voice. So a billboard matches a tweet effectively.
Yeah. I mean, our head of creative services, he runs a meeting based on the Pixar meetings called the Brain Trust. And it's a group of people that get together from all walks of the organization, and they bring up ideas, and they're very, very open and intentional and honest about what ideas are good and what ideas are bad and what makes sense for us and what doesn't. And they get a lot of great content coming out of those meetings. So you have to be able to understand and realize that it's not based on title, who's going to have the good ideas. In fact, the best ideas can sometimes come from the people on the front lines, and then no one has any ego about where those ideas come from, because at the end of the day, it comes out on the team account and it's about the team.
Yeah. And I think that team mentality is real, really important, because I have seen super talented people, like, you know, with the great thumbs that can do it, that then go, I'm moving on to some other opportunity. And you're like, hang on, what happened to that account? The whole, you know, and you realize it was really the talent piece, which again is absolutely vital. But if you can't have, you know, a next man up type of, or next woman up type of mentality, it can make, you know, the length of the brand and building on the brand a little bit harder.
Yeah. And again, like you make sure you hire really great people that are in a lot of ways irreplaceable, but you, it's about the brand and not the person. And so, should they move on or have a different opportunity? Or, you know, again, I've been in that role. It's a grind. I mean, it's 24 hours, 7 days a week, depending on what happens. And you're constantly updating and refreshing your feed. And you can only do that for so long before you have to hand the keys to someone else. So.
Definitely. So recently, you added innovation officer to your title. What does that mean?
Yeah. So for us, that means it's good timing with all the things going on, although this happened before then. It really means that in addition to, you know, overseeing the marketing and the digital piece, it's where our business goes from here. The NBA made Amy Brooks the chief innovation officer, and they have asked the teams to take a harder look at innovation and push on innovation. So we are doing that. And that, you know, again, that means what sort of new types of projects, new streams of revenue, new ways to find fans. Those are all the projects that our team is focused on. There's a very talented woman that works for me, Krista Stout, and she oversees that group, the innovation group, as well as our social responsibility group. And so, you know, she's on the committee that the NBA has, which is six or seven teams, and sits on that committee. And they're talking constantly these days about, you know, barriers that can come down, walls that can come down to help drive and create new revenue streams. And it's going to be really, really important for us moving forward. And, you know, we've always had a really good relationship with our IT team and our technology group. And this group does not report to me, but we have, you know, it allows us to be in lockstep with them as we look to create our marketing technology stacks and do things to better personalize our marketing to our fans.
So you mentioned it, like you've been in that role since, you know, October, and it's been a focus since then. Is innovation harder during a pandemic, or is it like absolutely necessary during a pandemic, or is it just happening because you're doing so many different things and changing processes that it's almost innovation by accident?
Yeah, it's easier, if anything, because it's forced our hand. In a lot of ways, right? We never would have thought we would have a need to have virtual fans at games. And now here we are, you know, filling seats for virtual fans. So it's not, I hesitate to use the words exciting because we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's not exciting, but it is stimulating and it's interesting. And we have a lot of work to do. And it's creating, if you're creative and you have great ideas and you have, you know, you're the kind of person that likes things to be new and different and fresh, like this is the time to be in the league, because we're being forced pretty rapidly to change the way we're doing things. And you know, it's not just our industry. I was talking to some other folks, and I always talk about, you know, when Apple comes out with a new system update, I'm always, for the phone, I'm always thinking, okay, well, they're doing notifications different. They're doing location. Like, how are we going to market and do this? And this pandemic has been like a software update for the world.
Yeah.
And no, it so has. We're sitting here thinking, okay, more people are up shopping online. More people are ordering groceries this way. So how is this going to change us when we eventually come back to having fans in our building? You know, one small example of that is, okay, why do we have to stand in line to order food? Why can't we order food from our phone and just go pick it up? Like, why is there any of this? So it's really making us think through every journey that a fan has in their game day experience to make it not only safer, but how can it just be easier? And so, you know, that's what we're working through right now.
Yeah, because we have got fans that have already got changed behaviors and will have changed behaviors. But the other part, and I take your point, exciting is, you know, the wrong word, but there are things that are being forced upon us, like virtual fans, that you just wouldn't have considered because you were like, we've got to fill, you know, the rose garden. Like, that's your focus. We've got to get the cheeks and the seats. You know, right. And now it's like, oh, well, how about we focus on the fans that aren't in the stands? Well, what can we do with them? It's like, well, some of the innovations and some of the things that get rolled out now don't need to go away. Like, you know, the idea of these virtual fans, well, why wouldn't that still continue when you come back and you have different fans from around the world being part of it? I did want to touch on something. How much do you think Paul Allen's legacy helps drive innovation for the Blazers?
It's 110%. Paul was the, no disrespect to anywhere else I've ever been, but Paul was, the Blazers were his passion. And, you know, he was an innovator at heart, and he always was asking the right questions and pushing us to innovate and be different and change and even push the NBA on their league rules. And Jody's the same way. Jody's been the same way. She wants us to push the envelope and be different and try things and change. And it really, really is built into our DNA as an organization to do this sort of stuff, which, again, I just feel so lucky. I talk to a lot of other teams who struggle with getting the resources or getting the buy-in. And, you know, so much of what we're able to do is not because of, you know, me or anyone on my team, but it's the runway that we've been allowed by ownership and by our president to go out and do different new things.
Definitely. So we've touched on it a few times. Obviously, we rescheduled this conversation. I think I got the message, sorry, dude, got to reschedule, got a meeting, you know, with the NBA. I think something's happening. I'm like, okay. Take us back to, you know, the NBA is in mid-season. You're in that regular beats and regular rhythm of there's a game and then there's a travel day and then the guys that got a home game, then they're on the road. You know, the NBA decides to shut down with, you know, take us through those first couple of weeks or those first couple of days of what you were doing as a team, trying to figure out, you know, what is next. It would have been a crazy time.
Yeah, it's so funny. I will never forget March 11th, you know, the day that the Rudy Gobert had tested positive and the NBA season was put on pause. But it really bubbled up to that, right? I mean, we were at the end of February, we were sitting here wondering how we were going to tackle this and what we were going to do to get our arena clean and make fans feel safe. And we had a home game a couple of days before that, and the no-show rate was one of the highest no-show rates that we'd ever seen in a game.
Yeah.
And it was starting to feel like, okay, people are feeling a little less confident coming. And I was at work that day on March 11th, and we did not have a game, but the OKC game was about to start, and they were playing Utah. And their game was like paused, or it was odd. And I'm like, I just have to get home. Like, I'm already late. I got to get home. And I'm driving home, and my phone just starts blowing up with text messages, and I don't read them in drive. So I pulled over and started reading them, and they said that the game had been canceled. And then quickly after that, Tom Hanks had it. And then quickly after that, the season was on hiatus. So I had to turn around. I think I went home because I was helping my kid with some science fair stuff, and then had to quickly turn around and come back to work. And we kind of spent all night crafting our strategy with season ticket holders. sponsors, what our content was going to look like. I mean, we as a leadership team, we got together and just talked through it all. And then the first few weeks of it, you know, everyone was transitioning our staff of 200 to work from home.
Yep.
Which we've never had to do. And you're just sitting and waiting for more news and information from the league, which, you know, they didn't know, and like nobody did, where things were headed. So it was really, you know, my priority was making sure that our staff of marketing folks felt comfortable and they had what they needed and they had the tools that they needed. So I spent a lot of time doing that. You know, we did throwback broadcasts as all teams did to try to keep folks engaged. But it was really like, we need to communicate with our fans and our season ticket holders and help them understand that we're here for them no matter what they're going through. And we're going to be transparent and upfront about everything, that we're not going to try to pull one over them. And so that was really the priority. And at the time, we have a really talented corporate communications leader now, but at the time we didn't. So I was jumping in and helping out with that as well. So it all feels like a bit of a whirlwind. And it was, now I will never forget how that day, for sure.
I mean, I can imagine, and yeah, and then there's me saying, "Hey, let's do a podcast." You're like, "Go away." But it was fun. It was interesting to watch, and it wasn't just the NBA. It was, you know, especially the sports that stopped that, you know, that first 2 weeks. The holy hell, we have no games. Period. We're not off season. We're in season, and you know, all the stuff that teams were throwing at the wall, like, "Hey, here's replays and here's throwbacks," and there was a bit of a, we're in make good territory. Like, we've got to keep everything going because we've got to do, and you know, you're talking to sponsors, like, we still need stuff. Like, but the sport might come back. We don't know where. And there was a real fervor of activity from a lot of content teams to go, well, normally we're posting this much stuff every day of the week. We'll sort of keep that pace up. And then we sort of, like, 2 or 3 weeks in, we're like, okay, we're in here for a while. Let's take a deep breath and slow down a bit. And, you know, we don't lack time because everyone's stuck at home. Mm-hmm. Did you find that both your team found a rhythm working from home, figuring out what content, you know, and sort of how the fans wanted content and few different things after that initial flurry of there was a, you know, a little bit of a lot of posting and different content, but then you found a bit of rhythm because it was sort of like a pseudo off season, but it was a pseudo hope it's coming back season. And like you said, then there's the comms piece of, we'll keep you informed as much as we're informed because you don't know when you're coming back. Did you sort of find a rhythm of this? Again, it's like a weird COVID off season.
I'd be lying if I said we've found a rhythm. I think there were so many things happening at once because you had COVID, and so then you were kind of wondering, you know, how things felt, like if it was your traditional humor, like how is that stuff going to land? And then let's not forget the Ahmaud Arbery event happened, Breonna Taylor happened, then it got into George Floyd, and it was very quickly becoming apparent that, you know, there was a whole other racial injustice piece that was unraveling in addition to the pandemic, and it never ever felt comfortable to kind of go back to the way that it was, meaning, you know, if you weren't saying something about those things, you were ignoring them. And so we never found our footing. I don't think we constantly had to shift, as everyone did.
Yeah. So you mentioned Black Lives Matter. That's obviously impacted the NBA, impacted the world. And the Trailblazers organization, you know, looking to, like I said, make a statement, can't be silent. What were the conversations on how to respond? Because there was real pressure from a lot of, from the public on how do you respond? How strong do you respond? Who are you supporting? What were those conversations like internally to help frame the Trailblazers' response?
For sure. For us, there was no hesitation from our president or ownership to respond. And I think we pretty quickly had a statement out, just saying that yes, Black Lives Matter, and there is a problem and we need to help solve it. And I think what our president, and he's, you know, he was very right about this, is he didn't just want it to be a statement. And so, you know, we quickly built out the It Could Have Been Me video series that we had a very talented person in ticket sales, actually, Alexis McKinney, and she's phenomenal. She helped write the script and put it together. and really get it out. And so the video content was compelling. We also started a fund. So that fund will be, you know, we'll have more public information about that soon, but we had staff contribute, we've had players contribute, our ownership's going to contribute, and it's going to be an annual thing that we're going to constantly contribute to help support and lift up Black voices and Black lives. And that's really, really important to us and has been for a while. We've been engaged in DEI work for the last 3 years as an organization to try to understand what diversity and inclusion means and how it can help raise voices and create better content and have better business outcomes. And so the timing was all these things in America happened at once. And so it was very, very heavy, especially for people of color at our company to deal with, and rightfully so. And so it was a lot, and we had to come out with a very, very clear message. And, you know, it's challenging because there is this idea that it's political, and I just unfortunately don't agree with that. I think that, you know, it's silence, and that's basically consent, or it's you're speaking out on this stuff. And if you can't get behind the fact that all or Black lives matter, I don't know how to get you there.
I mean, and the other part is you as a manager, you've got a team that are on the front lines, on the digital front lines, if you will, that have to put out the message. They, you know, they completely believe it, but they're also got to hear the other side and the people competing and the fierce debate that's currently happening. You've got to, I guess, look after the wellness of your staff and your players that are, you know, I guess on those physical front lines, if they're at marches and those kind of things, but also on the digital front lines, getting those type of comments, you know, shut up and dribble, those kind of things that are a common catchphrase, unfortunately, in the digital world.
Right. Well, and we have an equity statement, and everyone also gets to see that at our company, and we're really pushing hard, and we're not there yet. I mean, we're not where we want everyone who's a Blazers fan or who comes to our arena for any show, event, or concert to feel comfortable being here, no matter what you look like, no matter what your background, no matter where you're from. And how that helps our digital team is if they have the equity statement as their mindset, then if a fan comes and says hateful remarks or racist remarks, they can shut them down. They can block them. They can do what they need to do. They don't have to feel helpless. If our season ticket holder calls does not agree with the consensus that Black Lives Matter or wants their money back, they can have their money back. I mean, you know, at the heart of all of this is our equity statement and making people feel like they belong. And so there's nothing in the way of that. And certainly things come up and we have conversations about it, but, you know, equity and a better sort of future for everyone is what's always going to win out. And we have that support again from ownership on down.
So we're recording this a couple of days after the NBA has kicked back off in the bubble in Orlando. We're seeing all the innovations with Microsoft Teams and you know, virtual fans and those kind of things. How we had discussions around on the SportsBiz Zoom on how the NBA teams would be able to cover them from just an execution point of view. How are the Blazers able to cover the team in the bubble? Like, how many staff of your digital team are there? And I'm guessing the rest are still back in Portland working from home. How is the team working now in that strange scenario?
Yeah, it's been – so Amara Baptist is down in the bubble. She has volunteered the next however many weeks of her life to be down there, and she's done a phenomenal job. You know, typically we'll travel three people for road trips. We'll have Casey Holdall, our beat writer, Amara, and then usually Bruce, our photographer, or Tristan, our videographer. So only having Amara down there, we've kind of asked her to do, you know, everything. Yep. And she's doing a great job. Back home, we have everybody, you know, helping out, whether it's getting replays up quickly or helping with other content or posting on other platforms. And so we're kind of at the ready for things that are going to come up. And, you know, I have to give an enormous amount of credit to the NBA. And I just don't know how even it was possible for them to come up with this concept as quickly as they did, to have it start and have a season. I know for our employees, it's been a real morale booster to be able to watch games again and finish the season off sort of the best way possible. And, you know, ratings have been phenomenal, especially for us locally. Interest is huge and it's high and web traffic's high and social media engagement. And we know, you know, this gives you hope and certainly confidence that once we are back in market and we can have fans safely again, you know, fans will come back because sports is just so woven into who they are and what they like to do.
But back to our point before, some of the things that the NBA is doing from a broadcast innovation point of view with, you know, the virtual decals, you know, so they flip the switch, it's a Trailblazers game and you're seeing the Trailblazers decals on there and all the innovations that are happening, again, that's only going to be make things better, you know, when you move back to regular games, you know, how can you tweak that? What would it look like? You know, gives the NBA all these different commercial options, whether it's, you know, changing the ends, you know, the courtside signage quarter by quarter and all of those things that are going to come out of this and go, oh, we've got a few more bells and whistles to play with going forward.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that, and again, so much credit to them and talking with, I mean, the NBA could have certainly just done this on their own and not asked for teams to weigh in, but every step along the way, they've asked for teams to be part of the process. Knowing that each of the teams has its own unique circumstances and needs. And, you know, everyone that's involved, I know, has been pretty happy with the outcome. And yeah, all of these things, virtual fans is a really interesting, great way to engage season ticket holders and sponsors. There's the signage on the court is, I mean, depending on what broadcast you're seeing different logos. Yep. And beacons. So that's been phenomenal. The other signage opportunities that exist, it's in the short time again that they were able to pull it off, we've been able to carve back a lot of revenue that we thought was actually just going to be lost.
Well, terrific talking to you. I want to finish off with the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I do. It was I was 6 years old, and my dad took me out of school to go see the Chicago White Sox play the Baltimore Orioles on opening day, and this was at the old Comiskey Park. And it was mind-blowing just to kind of see, you know, like the smells and the sights and the sounds, and I'll never forget it. It was great.
Would Frank Thomas, was it back in his era or before that?
Before, it was the Carlton Fisk era. So.
Oh, okay. That's fine. So you would have been a lot of sports events in your time. Do you have a favorite go-to food or a favorite food memory?
My favorite food at a sporting event is when, and it's not a guarantee, but always like a good veggie hot dog. So I'm a vegetarian. So when you can get a really good veggie hot dog and put all the fixings on, especially a Chicago-style one, that's the way to go for me.
Terrific. What's the first app you open in the morning?
It's usually Pocket, and I'm catching up on old articles that I saved from the night before just to kind of start the morning out with some reading.
Okay, so you see the headline and you save it and actually read the article.
Yeah.
Most people just read the headline and go, oh, I'm on top of that now. But
I feel like you need. I always like to have a little bit more context.
That's fair enough. Is there someone that either you follow or read or admire that the podcast listeners should follow, and why?
Yeah, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates is a phenomenal writer and author. He's written a couple of really inspiring books for me. And I would just recommend them for any white person who's really learning to learn more about how we got to this point. You know, his 8 Years in Power book, or Between the World and Me, which is a letter to his son about police violence that was committed, is really, really, really inspiring. Again, is an odd word, but I think those types of things are really eye-opening to help you understand. And they certainly helped me understand the state of the world and how we got to this.
Terrific. Last question, and I'll give you two options, but what social media platform is your MVP? And so you can answer it as the Trailblazers, but then also answer as Dwayne from a personal point of view. And you can only have one. We're not handing out medals and participation medals here. It's a one.
That's easy. I'll say Instagram. Instagram is very versatile, Swiss Army knife. I mean, you can as a trailblazer with my trailblazer hat on, it's really great to advertise on. People, again, tell you too much information so you can really target ads quite well. Yep. And Instagram is, I think, where you see the most talent in terms of other content providers, whether it's the photography or the video that they shoot. I just think that's the best one.
So we're recording this now. My tweets tell me that Instagram Reels, which is their new tweak, this is the super early hot take, right? Because it only got launched today, which is effectively Instagram's take of TikTok. Right? Because, you know, they've already stolen Snapchat stories. And given the current environment, currently we're recording this, TikTok could be banned. It could be bought by Microsoft by the time this gets published. Do you think? The main thing is do you think their efforts are going to be as successful as they were, I guess, stealing Snapchat stories and further enhancing that product?
I do. I mean, if history is any indication, they certainly know how to take something and improve upon it. And I've doubted them before, and they continue to come up with great products that people definitely want to be in tune to. So I'm not going to doubt Facebook on this one.
Yeah, it's starting to. It definitely makes that $1 billion buy to buy Instagram, you know, whatever it was 6 years ago, right, look like an absolute bargain, doesn't it?
Right. It's crazy. I mean, who would have thought? And they've really turned that platform into something that obviously is highly monetizable. And to be able to have both audiences on Facebook and Instagram, and the amount of things that people tell Facebook and Instagram that helps us market is phenomenal. And if they actually knew it, they may not do it as much.
This is true. Thank you very much for your time. Where is the best place for people who want to connect with yourself on the internet?
Yeah, you know, certainly reach out via Twitter or LinkedIn. I check those areas plenty of times a day, not a day, but plenty of times in a week. And, you know, especially if you're an up and coming student, you know, happy to help talk through any questions that you might have about the industry or getting into the industry. It's something that I had when I was coming up that I really appreciated, and you always want to pay it forward. So
definitely. Yeah. So your name, you're like one of the originals where you just go, well, let's grab our personal brand on Twitter. Reach out to Dwayne Hankins. Say thank you for the podcast. All the best for the rest of the NBA season, and all the rest. Stay safe, and hopefully maybe one day we'll be able to actually catch up at one of those things like a conference or a bar and share a beer.
I can't wait to see you again, Sean. It's been way too long.
Find out more about SportsGeek's Digital to Dollars process at digitaltodollars.com. We'd love your support on our Patreon campaign. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon.
Thanks again to Dwayne Hankins. You can send him a tweet, Dwayne, D-E-W-A-Y-N-E, Hankins, on Twitter, or reach out to him, Dwayne Hankins, on LinkedIn, and give him some praise on what the Portland Trailblazers have been doing online and some of their efforts that they have been putting out there, but also what they're doing on the court. I'm recording this after game one, where in the playoffs, where the Portland Trailblazers' fairy tale run has continued, not only getting into the playoffs, but beating the Lakers in the very first game. So it was funny recording that before that Cinderella run started. They were in the bubble, but what an amazing run it has been so far, and all the best wishes to my friends at the Portland Trailblazers. Before I jump off this podcast, there has been a bit of a conversation piece, and was a bit of a conversation piece around the redesigning sport post-COVID. For mine, the world of sport is going to change. It's going to change. It's going to look very different in the next 12 to 18 months. I know there's a lot of my friends and people who are listening that are currently out of work and being pushed out or displaced by COVID. If that's you, please reach out. Please get in touch. I'm doing my best to help find opportunities for people. But I want to be connected with talented people that are looking to do cool things. My goal for 2020 was to work on big problems and work on cool things. For that, I need smart and talented people. So if you're out of work and talented, please get in touch. And likewise, if you're restructuring your business or restructuring your team and trying to figure out how it will be, how you will get everything done with less people, please get in touch, because I will be able to connect you with these same talented people. I'm trying to pull together some of the smartest people in sports digital, sports technology, sports commercialization, data, to help fill the void left by COVID. So, you know, please reach out. Very much, you know, and one thing we have got a lot of is time. We're happy to have a chat to figure out how we can help you across digital, commercial, content production, marketing, ticket sales campaigns, sponsorship campaigns, because I'm really excited about some of the opportunities in some of the people I've been talking to and connecting, where we can tackle some of those projects. So please reach out. If you want to just set up a phone call, go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call or ask me on a Zoom call. That's it for this week. Thanks again to my guest, Wayne Hankins from the Portland Trailblazers. Until next week, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
We'd love your support on our Patreon campaign. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Patreon. Want to help drive more revenue from your digital efforts? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.